Welcome to this episode of our special podcast series, a collaboration between ASTCT Talks and Cancer Network. In each episode, we dive into the latest developments and challenges in the treatment of multiple myeloma, T-cell malignancies, and other pivotal topics in oncology, hematology, stem cell transplantation, and cellular therapy. Join us as we speak with leading experts, uncover new research insights, and tackle key issues facing healthcare professionals today. Dr. Mitchell Horwitz from Duke Cancer Institute spoke about key developments in allogeneic and cord blood transplantations across different hematologic malignancies. He highlighted the impact of omadubicel on patient outcomes and ongoing initiatives dedicated to reducing the risk of graft-versus-host disease during transplantation, among other areas. We'll be talking a little bit about your assessments of omadubicel as well as its long-term impacts. You were an investigator on different trials assessing the agent, including study P0501, supporting the approval of the agent to reduce time to neutrophil recovery and infection in patients with different hematologic malignancies in April of 2023. How has this agent changed the treatment landscape following this initial approval?
Yeah, the treatment landscape itself is incredibly dynamic. When this product was conceived by a small startup company in Gametocell in, say, 2011, 2012, the landscape for what we consider as alternative donor transplantation, meaning allogeneic transplantation using donors other than adult matched donors, was wide open, and there was a great clinical need for such donors. But over the last 10 to 15 years, that's changed quite a bit, and there are many options for patients who don't have a match. And omadubicel, with its FDA approval, is just one of a number of these options. Umbilical cord blood transplantation has been in practice for over 40 years, and it continues to be a very important graft source for children, but for adults, it was always a bit of a struggle and difficult. But omadubicel has changed that. Its advent, along with other advances in the field, have made cord blood transplantation for adults much better, with outcomes that are significantly better than they were years ago.
I see. Thank you for providing that comprehensive look at the landscape and how it has changed with the introduction of this agent. I know the FDA also recently approved omadubicel as the first cellular therapy to treat patients with severe aplastic anemia back in December 2025. So, in your opinion, what does this approval mean for patients with this rare blood disorder?
Yeah, the emphasis is on rare. These are rare events. It's a rare disease, and allogeneic stem cell transplantation is currently being studied as perhaps a better option as first line treatment, whereas previously it was a first line treatment only for the younger population of patients, say under 30 years old. And so, with that in mind, there's going to always be patients who don't have matches. And the approval of omadubicel adds cord blood as an option for this population. Historically, when cord blood has been used as a stem cell graft source for patients with aplastic anemia, the results, the engraftment frequency and the outcomes were not good. And while the study that led to approval is small, it appears that when cord blood is expanded and becomes what is known as omadubicel, the feasibility of cord blood as a graft source has improved considerably.
Gotcha. Appreciate you going into a little bit more detail about the impacts of this drug as well as the other approval. And to expand the scope a little bit, what other research are you currently involved with as it relates to perhaps omadubicel or other therapeutic strategies in the stem cell transplantation field? And how might these ongoing initiatives build upon previous progress that you've seen?
The ironic thing about cord blood transplantation today, and that includes omadubicel transplantation, is that in previous years, in the past, cord blood, despite being mismatched, had the advantage of a lower incidence of acute and chronic graft versus host disease. As I told my patients, I explained to them that cord blood is derived from a brand new human being that's really never seen the world and never been an immune system that's never been properly trained. So we historically have felt that cord blood was easier to trick into thinking it was in its own body, the body it was designed to be in. But with this, you know, changing landscape of both matched and mismatched allogeneic transplantation, the risks of acute and chronic graft-versus-host disease have declined considerably to the point where cord blood doesn't stand out anymore as a graft source with a lower expected graft-versus-host disease risk. So that has prompted us here at Duke and elsewhere to look into ways of reducing the risk of graft-versus-host disease following cord blood or cord blood-derived transplantation. And so we have a pilot study here at Duke looking at the feasibility of adding a co-stimulatory blocking monoclonal antibody abatacept to the treatment approach. And so we hope that with this addition, graft versus host disease risk will decline and be in line with or perhaps even better than the other graft sources that we've insane.
That sounds like great work. Thank you for getting into detail about that. I can see how managing the risk of GVHD can help improve outcomes associated with transplantation. And in line with that, I know that effective prophylaxis and other supportive measures may also help with improving quality of life and such. So from your perspective, how can clinicians sort of provide that level of prophylaxis and supportive care to improve quality of life as well as other outcomes among the patients who undergo transplantation?
There are nuances to the use of umbilical cord blood as a graft source, both umbilical cord blood and omidubicel. For the most part, it's a very similar approach as one who for transplantation of patients from matched or adult donor sources. But I think that we all have appreciated that, particularly when it is applied to the adult population, the risk of infections, opportunistic infections, particularly viral infections, is greater after a cord blood transplant. So our approach here and others, I think, have also found that surveillance for viruses such as Epstein-Barr virus, human herpes virus 6, cytomegalovirus is particularly important. And so with that kind of surveillance, added surveillance, we feel that we can mitigate some of these risks of a delay in immune recovery.
I see. Thank you for describing those strategies. And as we sort of begin to wrap up here, what do you ultimately hope your colleagues and listeners take away from this discussion, considering everything we talked about from the prophylaxis to the approvals for omidubicel?
I think in the field of stem cell transplantation, there have become silos of providers, both faculty and other associated healthcare providers that fall into camps of what the optimal and the optimal graft source is. There's so many options today that one is inclined to say that with limited data, one is better than the other, and one should dominate and the other should fall by the wayside. And I think my main message would be that, you know, it's important to have all these options, whether it be cord blood, mismatched family members, mismatched unrelated donors, matched siblings. All of these graft sources need to be made available, need to be studied extensively, and we need to find perhaps what the best niche would be for each of these graft sources and make sure that all these graft sources are utilized at the various institutions. The nuances such as infection prophylaxis or infection monitoring are familiar to the transplant centers. And by doing that, I think we can, you know, continue this trend of having a graft source for everyone and improving outcomes.
Those are some great points to close on. Thank you very much. Was there anything else regarding your work or the field in general that you may have wanted to bring up that we may have missed or didn't get a chance to discuss earlier?
I would just close by acknowledging the incredible work of the National Marrow Donor Program that has really made alternative donor transplantation possible. They're conducting leading studies in mismatched unrelated donor transplantation. They continue to support cord blood banks and facilitating cord blood allocation to transplant centers. So without them, we really wouldn't be able to do what we're doing. And so that's a critical asset for us.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode. We hope you found our discussions enlightening and relevant, offering you a deeper understanding of the present and future of cancer treatment and research. Make sure to join us again for more insightful episodes as we continue to bring you expert opinions and the latest developments from the forefront of oncology and hematology. Please subscribe and leave reviews wherever you get your podcasts, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. For additional resources and episodes, visit our websites at www.cancernetwork.com and www.astct.org.